From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The working conditions alleged at CJ's seafood crawfish plant in Brobridge, Louisiana, have blown open a conversation on the dark side of bottom-rung work in America. Employees at the plant say they were locked in, forced to work 24 hours straight, 80-hour weeks, physically threatened, abused. Walmart has suspended the plant as a supplier the Department of Labor is investigating. Experts say the alleged abuses are extreme, but sit on a continuum of harsh labor conditions in America that hard times have made worse. This hour on Point, exploitation on the bottom rung of American labor. You can join the conversation. Have you heard the CJ's seafood story? Can you relate? Is this somebody else's problem, or do wages and working conditions for all erode from the bottom up? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today is Amanda McElfresh. She's a reporter with the Daily Advertiser in Lafayette, Louisiana, west of New Orleans, about 20 miles from Brobridge. Amanda, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So how did this story come to light, Amanda?
This all got started around the first week of June when about 40 workers from CJ Seafood came forward with allegations about the 24-hour shifts, no overtime, that threats were being made against themselves and their families if they did not comply with the working conditions there. They were locked in to work for several hours with very minimal breaks. They contacted the National Guest Worker Alliance, and within a few days, this reached Walmart, which uses CJ Seafood as a supplier in about 30 of their stores across the South. Walmart from there contacted one of their third-party compliance auditing companies who visited that plant in the middle of June. They weren't able to complete a full investigation, but they did find enough violations of their supplier standards that caused them to suspend using CJ Seafood for the time being.
Now, Amanda, what goes on in a crawfish processing plant? I mean, I assume this is like shrimp or something. They've got to get the shells off, and what they're taking the tails off. This is what the Sam's Club, the Walmart Sam's Clubs, they're taking them from freshly harvested to ready to head out to the stores?
That's exactly it. They're cleaning it and processing them and removing the shells and packaging them, preparing them for sale in the retail stores.
It's not a year-round season. There's a season, so they're working heavily during that time, I guess. This isn't like it was a big fancy factory from what I could see the photographs. This is a fairly, I mean, it may be a big player, I don't know, but it looked like a modest plant.
Yeah, it's not a particularly large facility. It's known in the industry, but there's other companies here that I guess are more well known. So it is a little bit on a more smaller scale.
You talked about threats. What kinds of threats were being made here? Against whom? To do what?
The allegations were that the employees were threatened with beatings, and that their families would also suffer some kind of beatings or violence if they did not go along with the work. These are all workers from Mexico who were here on work visas.
And this was the H-2B guest worker visa, I guess.
Correct.
And we're talking about shifts here. Some of the women complaining they'd start at 2 a.m. and work till 6 p.m. the next day or longer. People talking about working 38 hours in a 48-hour period, 80-hour weeks. And they were literally barricaded in to keep them to that schedule? Is that the allegation?
That is the allegation, that they were actually locked in the facility and were not allowed to leave. If they had any breaks at all, they were very few and for only a few minutes at a time.
Now, CJ's is owned by Michael LeBlanc. I'm reading here that he's also the head of the Crawfish Processors Alliance, a kind of industry group that has worked against tougher labor oversight. Is that right?
Yes, that's information we have as well.
So he is not like some anonymous guy. This is apparently he's got some prominence within the industry.
Correct.
Is this an industry overall with a bad reputation for labor practices?
Not that we have heard. We have not heard these kind of allegations before with any of the other facilities around here. If anything is happening, nothing has came to light.
What's been the reaction? I mean, it's got a lot of attention around the country because the allegations are of such kind of out there behavior and impositions and threats and all the rest. What's been the reaction in the neighborhood, so to speak, Amanda, in Bayou country there?
I think it's it's been a surprise and, you know, maybe a little bit of disappointment as well. It is kind of a little bit under the radar, and so I think when this kind of comes to light, people realize that the number of workers that we have here, that this is such a mecca for the industry. And I think people realize the number of workers that we have here, and it's kind of waking some people up and saying maybe this is something we need to pay more attention to.
Amanda, are these jobs that American workers in Lafayette or Brobridge themselves would apply for, would go for, or are these almost always done by, I mean, these happen to be Mexicans, but are they usually done by immigrant labor?
That they are almost always done by immigrant labor. Very few of that is done locally.
And do people think about the effect on local wages, or they don't really make the connection of having people come in, work 80 hours a week, allegedly get no overtime, and all the rest?
I don't think they really make the connection, and I think that's probably what this these allegations have brought to light is people are kind of seeing the process a little bit more clearly than in the past.
Well, it's fully in the national spotlight now. Amanda McElfresh is a reporter for the Daily Advertiser in Lafayette, Louisiana. Amanda, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
With us now from Washington, D.C. is Saket Soni. He's executive director of the National Guest Worker Alliance based in New Orleans. The workers of the CJ Seafood plant reached out to the National Guest Worker Alliance when they decided they wanted to take action against their employer back in June. Saket Soni, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
How did they know to reach out to you? How did they know you were even there?
Well, Tom, the National Guest Worker Alliance represents thousands of guest workers in multiple industries. We keep tabs on dozens and dozens of workplaces, just like CJ's. And so when the CJ's workers wanted to come forward, they knew that an organization existed and were able to contact our organizers.
The first flare that went up was a 911 call to the police, apparently from an employee there. But as I'm sure you know, when the police showed up, she was too frightened to describe what had happened, I guess. She said she dialed 911 by accident.
Well, that's because the owner, Michael LeBlanc, gathered the workers together and said that he knew good people and bad people in Mexico and implied that he would retaliate with violence against families of workers who complained.
You mean, and so there's when a he said he knew bad here. People, it meant he knew maybe gang people who could go after their families back home? Is that the idea? Something like that?
Well, that's right. I mean, the context in Mexico right now is very much that families live under a reign of terror. These workers had a very acute understanding that Michael LeBlanc was a very well-connected man, and he was clearly threatening their families.
You've spoken with these workers. Give us a more tactile sense of what was going on inside that plant, allegedly.
Well, the company was forcing them to work 16 to 24-hour days. They were forced to work 80-hour weeks. They were being paid illegally under the minimum wage. They were sometimes locked in the plant. They were threatened with beatings. And it goes further than that. The totality of circumstances added up to forced labor. Listen to this quote, Tom, from workers who testified to the independent investigator, the Workers' Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. One worker said, "People are sleepwalking. Some people fall asleep while peeling. One guy fell into the table asleep because he was so exhausted." There are particularly shocking things about CJ's Seafood. One of them is the lack of time for sleep in the schedule. In some cases, workers boiling crawfish were compelled to work for 20 hours straight and then allowed only 4 hours off after they had to return and begin another 24-hour shift. In all, they worked 44 hours over a 48-hour period, all of this involving strenuous manual labor.
And I've read they were monitored kind of all the time, video cameras around. They slept in company housing there, trailers around the plant maybe. So there really wasn't much of an easy way to get away and make their circumstances known.
Well, they worked in a small factory adjacent to Michael LeBlanc's housing. They slept in a labor camp essentially in his backyard. And like hundreds and thousands of guest workers, they could not easily step out of the labor camp and the compound where they lived and worked.
The owner here, Michael LeBlanc, is head of the Crawfish Processors Alliance. Does that suggest that this is standard practice in that industry, or does he appear to be an outlier, Saket?
Tom, unfortunately, this is an industry reality. The National Guest Worker Alliance has represented hundreds and hundreds of workers in this industry, and Michael LeBlanc is an industry player. As a matter of fact, this past April, new rules were supposed to have taken effect that would allow the Department of Labor to lift conditions in industries exactly like these, lift conditions for H-2B workers. Business owners like Michael LeBlanc sued the Department of Labor, and a group of senators, shamefully from both parties, voted to deny the Department of Labor funding to carry out the reform of the H-2B visa.
Is this just one bad industry, crawfish peeling and processing?
Well, this isn't one bad industry. There's a bigger story here. That's the story of the transformation of work in the United States. In this economy, all work is becoming like guest work. Jobs that used to be good, permanent, well-paying, dignified jobs are turning into temporary, minimum wage, often under minimum wage, exploitative labor.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about exploited labor in America, forced labor, vulnerable workers, the worst conditions. I'm joined this hour by Saket Soni, Executive Director of the National Guest Worker Alliance. His group has been right in the middle of this and many other labor situations that are pretty tough indeed. Also with us now from Washington is Ross Eisenbray. He's Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute, former Commissioner of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. Saket, stand by there in Washington. Ross Eisenbray, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tom.
Put this story in a bigger context for us. Saket has begun to do that, but what is the bottom rung of American labor and what's happening to it? How do you define this, describe this?
Well, the bottom rung is actually pretty big. It includes the 8 million undocumented workers who are here who work all the time in fear of being deported and so don't have really a full right to protect themselves when they're cheated on wages, and they're routinely cheated on wages according to numerous studies. Then you have the temporary guest worker workforce, which is a growing workforce. It's hundreds of thousands of people, and if the business community had its way, it would be probably millions. They're J-1 students working in the summer. They're H-2B guest workers. They're H-1B guest workers. There's a sort of alphabet soup of programs to allow employers to bring people in and have them work without the right to leave that employer, which is a key to the exploitation that happens.
Well, that's the deal. They're recruited to come to one workplace for one employer, and if that goes wrong, they're sent back home?
Right. That's exactly right. And it gives the employer enormous power over them. And as Saket was starting to say, that it's not just seafood. They're landscaping workers are the biggest occupation in the H-2B program. The employers got together and blocked the new rules. There were two separate rules. One would have raised wages for everybody in these programs and, more importantly perhaps, raised wages for Americans who could be recruited for those programs, for those jobs. So you have landscaping companies that pay $8 or $9 an hour when they used to pay $12 an hour, and then they say, well, we can't find Americans anymore. So the government went to them and said, well, the prevailing wage is really much higher. You have to offer $12 or $13 an hour, and then maybe Americans will take these jobs. The employers block the rule so that they can continue to offer these substandard wages. And then you have, in the seafood industry, it used to be that Americans did these jobs. They picked seafood. African-American women on the eastern Seaboard did these jobs in, you know, in several states. They're not employed there anymore. It's entirely immigrant labor, and it's because they've driven the wages down to minimum wage or lower.
And let me ask you, I want to look at that whole dynamic and at efforts to get some regulation around this, but what about the story at CJ's? I mean, we're hearing all these elements to it. Barricaded in, you know, abused, threatened, families threatened back in the home country. I mean, people kind of sounding terrified here. Is this a raging outlier? Is this like a super extreme, or is this, I don't know, what's the prevalence?
Well, it's extreme and it's bad, but it's really not that rare. There was a report a couple of years ago by the Southern Poverty Law Center about the H-2B program and found that this was widespread in forestry workers. The more isolated and the more rural I think these jobs are, the more likely you are to have terrible situations. I mean, these workers were living in the forests in tents or, you know, on the open ground. They were threatened with beatings. Their passports were taken so that they couldn't leave. Their families at home were threatened. They were told that, they had to pay thousands of dollars to get to the United States in the first place to take jobs that they thought were going to be much better. And so they knew that if they didn't do what the employer said and complete the entire contract, they would lose out. They'd be deported. They'd lose out on making back just what they'd borrowed to come to the United States.
Sakatsoni,
on top of that, their families were threatened at home.
Yeah, which makes a pretty tough cocktail to deal with. Sakatsoni, you've been following this for a while now. I mean, we know these stories go way back in American history, Triangle Shirt Factory and Grapes of Wrath, Steinbeck days and all the rest, but we liked to think that, and we know it never went away, obviously. Think about who picks those tomatoes and strawberries and all the rest in conditions, but we thought it was better. I mean, in the rough economy, has it become worse, Saket?
It's become worse because employers are trying to cut costs, and particularly in the Walmart economy, the thing that workers are up against is that Walmart is squeezing people like Michael LeBlanc,
the owner of the crawfish processor there. Yeah,
the owner of the crawfish factory at CJ's Seafood. Mm-hmm. He needs to sell at a certain price so that Walmart can sell at a certain price. So he has to cut costs. And the costs he's going to cut is the cost of dignity at the workplace. So he cuts out breaks and he forces workers to work 24-hour shifts. This is not a psychopath. It's a rational man with a business model. And his business model is driven by a larger business model, the Walmart business model, that has a supply chain.
And very tight control. I want to come back and look at that, the prices, how all this fits together. But we've got a lot of callers coming in here, and if we can turn to them as well. Sure. James in Kentucky. James, thank you for calling. You're on the air, James.
Hi, James.
Hi, James. You're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
As I told your screener, I'm not using my real name for fear that my employer might hear my name. This isn't just to immigrants. The economy has forced jobs. They're just not there to the point where the current employer I have now that I've been with for a while, we suffer verbal abuse. We get threatened all the time that if we don't abide by certain things that we could be terminated. We care for the disabled, and we are getting more and more put on one staff, and it's becoming, you know, almost dangerous to their health. And we've alerted, you know, the necessary organizations that oversight, mm-hmm. but they don't do nothing. Nothing ever comes of it. And even sometimes when we go to pick up our paychecks, there's paperwork that we have to sign that says we're, you know, liable for such and such, and it's supposed to be a training that, but if we don't sign it, they won't give us our check, and it just keeps getting worse, and we don't know when it's going to stop, and there isn't any jobs around.
So you stick with it. You stick with it, James, because you feel like you don't have options.
There is no options. There's no jobs, and you know, the even a raise has been freeze for years now. I mean, years. We make just barely above minimum wage, just barely.
And it sounds tough, James. I appreciate your call. I thank you for your candor and for speaking up on it there in Kentucky. Let me get one more, if I may, from Amma in Jericho, Vermont. Amma, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm an organic farmer, and while I traveled as a woofer in 2009 across America...
Working as an organic farmer, sort of on the move, woofer, yeah, okay.
Yes, I worked as an organic farmer with my partner. We got in a car, we sold all our stuff and left Boston and went across America, East Coast to West Coast, back again through the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
As we traveled, we heard stories, which I didn't want to believe. A couple of times we heard about a kind of modern slavery. And James, hang in there, buddy. I love you and we're with you. It isn't just happening to people of color. It also happens to white travelers, long hairs, or you're separated from your family, or you're traveling as an unpaid or underpaid agricultural worker. And we heard one particular story I didn't want to believe, but the fellow told us that he and his long-haired hippie girlfriend worked at a place, and I think this was in South Carolina, where they were locked in at night, not paid, and after 4 months, she got a feeling one night and said, "Hey, man, let's get out of here."
Mm-hmm.
They were getting their stuff together and getting in their truck, and men in a truck with guns were pulling up as they were leaving, and they were never paid. And they said that the Mexican workers there were not paid and were not leaving and were frightened and were working really hard. Now, we were lucky. We called ahead, checked on the internet, and looked for references or talked to the farmers before we arrived somewhere. But anyone traveling this summer and working on farms, please check out the situation before you go and make sure you have transport to leave if it's bad.
Amma, it's good advice, and I appreciate your report from the sort of labor trail there as well. I mean, watch out, but we like to think these things shouldn't or wouldn't happen so often in this country. Ross, James talks about enforcement. He's alerted the right people. Nothing's happened. What's the situation with labor law enforcement in this country?
Well, it's a pretty sad situation. The government isn't willing to pay for the kind of labor law enforcement we had when I was young. Back in 1980, for example, there were 1,600 wage and hour investigators working for the U.S. Department of Labor when we had a labor force of 99 million people. Now the labor force is 50% bigger, and we've rebounded from a low under Reagan and under Bush. The number of investigators fell to about 750. Now it's back to about 1,000, but still that's half as much enforcement per capita as we used to have, which means, you know, that violations are twice as likely to go uncovered.
Socket, here we've got listeners writing in, and Vasco says, let's see, Mexicans being treated poorly by American employers or shrimp costing $25 a pound. He says, I wonder what most Americans will choose. Why do you think Walmart's the biggest kid on the block? They give Americans what they want, stuff, cheap. I mean, we've got this kind of dynamic here, Socket, where people need low prices because their wages have not done so well lately. But if that's what you're going for, you're kind of hand in glove with Walmart, driving down the wage, aren't you?
Well, the question is, when Walmart offers low prices, we have to ask at what cost. Because as James said, it's not just Mexican workers. You don't have to be a guest worker locked in a crawfish factory to be trapped without choices in this economy. James in Kentucky is doing his best to try to serve the disabled. And he believes in work that is contributing to a community. But he deserves to be paid for that work. And we all deserve for our work to be dignified and decent. If basic American values are based on the idea of choices, then democracy and dignity can't just be checked, at the door of the workplace. You have to bring it into the workplace.
But Walmart stepped forward in this situation and suspended this crawfish processor. Does that mean that Walmart has got the white hat on here, the good guy hat? Because they said, no, we won't. We've got standards. These may not meet them. While it's being investigated, we're not going to do business with them.
Well, just to be clear, Walmart's initial reaction was to tell Newsweek's Daily Beast that the claims were unsubstantiated. Then as the media firestorm grew, they did an about-face and said that there were some claims. And then they said that they suspended the contract with CJ Seafood. The suspension of that contract is an important admission that Walmart's initial position was wrong. But it's also important that Walmart start taking responsibility not as a PR move, but because it wants to make its standards for suppliers real, and it wants to help contribute to an economy where worker exploitation isn't a necessary ingredient of low prices.
Walmart itself, Tom, you might remember, locked workers into stores. They were found guilty of locking workers into stores overnight,
cleaning
workers.
Yeah.
And they've been found guilty in several big class action suits of cheating workers on overtime pay, not paying for break time in California. That it's not a company with a sterling labor record.
This is the tip of the iceberg. You know, we did a survey of 18 Walmart vendors, and out of 18, we found that just 12 had an extraordinary, astronomical 600 plus federal labor citations. A company called Trident Seafoods, for example, was fined over $11,000 after OSHA found that its workers had been exposed to live electrical equipment carrying up to 480 volts. The list of abuses goes on and on.
But Walmart responded to that. They said, you picked up on abuses going all the way back to the 1980s. It's too far back. Their spokesman, Lopez, said your report is crafted by union-funded, union-backed group, little to do with solving real issues.
Well, you know, Tom, we wish we were union-funded. We're not. That's why I encourage all the listeners out there to make small donations to keep us in business. But the allegation of union funding is a distraction, ultimately, from the veracity of these workers' claims. The reality is that if patterns of abuses have gone on from the 80s, then we're looking at a pattern and a practice that's about 20 years old or more. Walmart's had 20 years to fix this problem. The problem has only grown. That's why we've now started an independent commission of people around the country who are going to take it on themselves to actually push Walmart to enforce its standards for suppliers. The commissioners include Barbara Ehrenreich, Scott Nova at the Workers' Rights Consortium, and a number of others who have looked at worker abuses across the country for many years, and who all agree that the breakdown of Walmart standards for suppliers has gotten to the point where it's causing a human rights crisis. If Walmart can't protect 40 workers in the small crawfish industry in the small town in Brobridge, Louisiana, how are we to expect that Walmart is going to protect the millions and millions of workers on its supply chain?
Is that the situation, Ross? We're counting on Walmart to be the defender of American labor?
Well, I think that you can't rely on the government when it's so underfunded to protect the workforce. And, you know, until we get members of Congress and frankly, a president who are willing to push for strong labor law enforcement, we've got to find another way to do it. And one way is to embarrass corporations that claim, like Apple, that claim that they have standards and then, in fact, subject their workers to terrible conditions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about exploited labor in America, forced labor. We're seeing vulnerable workers, the worst conditions. Socket Soni is with us. He's executive director of the National Guest Worker Alliance, CJ's Seafood in Brobridge, Louisiana, and its plant there, the location where allegedly we had 24-hour days, 80-hour weeks, no overtime, threats of physical violence, threats to families back in Mexico of guest workers in that case. Walmart suspended them as a supplier. Department of Labor now investigating. We'll see more there, but it's a pretty tough story. Sackett says it is hardly the only example of that. Ross Eisenbray is with us from the Economic Policy Institute and says we've got millions of people vulnerable to this right now. Sackett, Ross, lots of response online. Marlene says, have we become a nation of savages? Is this the 19th century? We've vilified unions for the last 40 years, so there's no protection for the laborer. The rich are becoming richer, she writes, and the poor are the servants of the rich. Andy writes, I make a decent wage and get an eight-hour day at a call center, but I'm not free to use the bathroom when I need to or even walk away from my desk. While the treatment of these immigrants is horrific, it's becoming difficult for all of us to find dignified work. Debt slaves, Andy writes, will submit themselves to any conditions. I mean, Ross, Americans must, though, still have some sense that there are standards that need to apply here.
Well, you know, the standards really are being degraded. Not that long ago, a quarter to a third of the workforce was unionized, and that meant that all of those workers had the right not to be fired without just cause. Everyone else, if you weren't in a union, the employer had the right to fire you at will, which meant for no reason or even a bad reason. Now we're down to the point where only 7% of the private sector workforce is unionized. And so you have entire industries like trucking and warehousing that used to be dominated by the Teamsters Union, where workers had dignity, they had careers, they had good pay and benefits. Now, you know, workers are lucky if they last for a year in a lot of the warehouse industry. They can be fired at will, and they are. Instead of being paid decent wages with benefits, they get no benefits, and they work on a piecework basis, which means, you know, the harder you work, the more you're paid, but the standards keep being lowered, and people barely make more than minimum wage at piecework.
You got to watch out when this dynamic gets going. I mean, the next thing you know, CJ Seafood, and allegedly the doors are barricaded and you're in there. Peter in Brookline, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm okay.
Long-time listener. I just a little background. I'm a tile installer. I've been doing residential remodeling for about 25 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my course of, you know, talking to people, I've run into quite a few illegal aliens, and, you know, I've seen a lot of mistreatment, you know. And, you know, I think that basically the powers that be and, you know, a pretty large segment of the American public have been turning kind of a blind eye to the whole thing, because for a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of winners and a lot of losers in this game, you know?
Yeah.
And pretty much that's all I wanted to say.
What's the effect on your wages,
great
Peter?
Great show. Right on.
What's the effect on your wages, Peter?
I've pretty much flat, you know? You know, I just been making the same money, same square foot price I was making 20 years ago, you know?
That's a long time without a raise. Peter, we wish you luck, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Thanks, Peter. Paul in Newbury, Vermont. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to make a couple points. I'm an employer of 8 employees in the landscape construction and maintenance business.
Okay.
And I've been in business about 30 years, and what I've seen the general worker problems we're having is definitely a regulation problem and mistreatment of the lower-tier worker. I'm bidding against guys that are paying their guys, you know, $8 to $10 an hour, and I'm paying my guys $15 to $20 an hour so they can feed their families and get a house and fulfill the American dream, but I'm getting pushed out of business. And I just recently got a call from a client who said, hey, listen, I can put a mason on the job for this much. And I said, well, I can't do that because I'd be losing money. Well, I'm going to go with him because he can do that. Well, what he just did is just degraded my profession, took money and food off my workers' plate, and it goes on and on because Americans don't seem to care anymore. It doesn't matter, just the cheapest possible you can get done. And they don't realize there's a cause and effect. And the effect is that the American worker can't fulfill an American dream anymore, even in the most basic tasks as, you know, when you're in trades.
Paul, it sounds like you're a good employer and want to be, but the pressure is on you to be a bad employer.
I just can't make it the things are going now. Guys that would come in and pay guys $8 an hour, they come and go every summer. They don't care about them. They don't care about their family at home. And I can't work to keep the guys that are really good. They care about their job. They love the green industry. They make good money. They want to be a grow with my company. And I can't get them there because I'm struggling. Me and my wife don't get a paycheck half the time because we got to make sure they get their wage.
Hey, Paul, you hang in there and talk to your representatives. It's a democracy, for heaven's sake. Let them know what you're seeing. Thanks for your call, Craig, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, part of the problem is that the government doesn't care because the way things are set up, it produces a lot more tax revenue for the government.
Why? And lower wages? You got less to tax? I don't know. Does that really? Why is that more revenue?
Because everything's so big, and when you have bigness, it produces more tax revenue. And then secondly, I'm a Republican, and I've told them that they don't want people living off the government, but they don't care if people live off the unions and all their benefits. And I predicted this would happen with the global economy, the enslavement of global labor. And I've been told by Walmart middlemen that Walmart doesn't care if they even make a profit.
Well, I don't know. I think they do overall, but sure, category by category, I'm sure they can have lost leaders. Craig, I appreciate your call. I want to bring in from New York City right now, Ai-Jen Poo. She's director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, based in New York, named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world in 2012. Ai-Jen Poo, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
If you're so influential, why are domestic workers having such a hard time, Ai-Jen?
That's a really good question. It is true. Domestic workers are having a hard time, and times are getting tougher out there, as you've heard from all of our callers and the other speakers today.
We've heard about abuse in a crawfish processing plant, but what about in lots of nice homes around this country where you've got domestic workers who you know, may themselves be vulnerable to labor abuse?
There are millions of women who go to work every day in other people's homes caring for the most precious elements of our lives, our families, our children, our seniors, and they are vulnerable to some of the worst abuses imaginable, still excluded from labor laws. Almost every major labor law to this day excludes domestic workers.
So their work is helping somebody else get a leg up at work, presumably. I mean, somebody's going off to work very typically, and you know, leaving this housework to them, I don't know, what does it make you think about fairness here, Ai-Jen, if they're not paid properly or treated well in that position?
There is a long history of devaluing the work that goes into caring for families and the work that's historically been associated with women's work. But as we heard before, there's also this long history of exclusion of workers from protections and a way in which our country has relied upon the forced labor of millions of workers. And that has got to change. I think that we actually have in this moment an opportunity to turn things around and to establish new protections for some of these workforces, enforce the standards that we have, and to create jobs that we desperately need in this country.
You're talking forced labor, even in the domestic help arena. Kelsey in Montgomery, Alabama, thanks for calling, Kelsey. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, the point I would like to make is that in low-level white-collar jobs,
mm-hmm.
it's not a matter of you having to work and not being paid. It's a matter of them telling you if you have 60 or 80 hours of work to do that you have to do it in the 40 hours.
So you're saying it's not just blue-collar work, it's not just seafood processors, even in white-collar situations?
Yes.
Have you seen that, Kelsey?
I'm retired from a job like that.
And did you feel like you had the standing or the leverage to say that's unreasonable at some point?
No, you have to get the job work done or you don't have a job.
Kelsey, I appreciate your call. Hey, Suckett, Ross, Ai-Jen, if we could go back for a moment. You talked about how last year, you know, the guest worker program is a piece of this, not a small one. That's what was going on in Louisiana there. There
yeah,
was this.
Paul,
yes?
Could I just say something about Paul's comment,
yeah,
which
please.
I think is really important?
This is he's the employer. He's got the landscaping and construction company, and he can't pay a decent wage.
Right. And so he's trying to employ people, you know, eight or ten workers at a decent wage. And his competition is not just people who are paying less, but also people who are bringing in guest workers for that industry, even though it's there, we have 13 million people unemployed, there are lots of people who could do landscaping work. We are actually importing 30,000 to 50,000 guest workers a year to do landscaping work, and they are underpaid because the law that would require that, that these workers be paid the actual prevailing wage has been blocked by Congress. It's an outrageous situation, and the Democratic senators and Republican senators who are responsible for this really are a huge part of this problem.
I want to name some names on that front, but describe for us, Ross, I think it was you talking about some of the interview and payment habits here that exclude Americans ultimately from these jobs. I mean, people, they don't really want American workers, so they'll schedule the interview, the job interview, for 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve, or they'll demand that people pick up a 50-pound bag and run around the office with it, or schedule the interview in a different state from where this relatively low-wage job is. I mean, the hoops put up for Americans to jump through make it kind of a farce. These really aren't intended for Americans, and then you don't have protection for the guest workers, Ross.
Right. All of that has been documented by the GAO, by the Inspector General, and by various investigators. But the bottom line is that if the job is offered at $8 an hour, when traditionally in the area it's normally paid at $12, or in Paul's case at $15 an hour, you're not going to get U.S. workers coming forward to take it. They can't survive, really. You know, you can't raise a family on an $8 an hour job. And then the employer is free to bring people in from overseas, you know, from Mexico or wherever they're recruiting from. So that just further drives down the wages. It makes it less likely that U.S. workers will want to do it. And over time, you get to the situation like with CJ's, where no U.S. workers ever even apply for those jobs because they've been so degraded.
So, Suckett, take us through what happened. I mean, this was just, was it in April that the Department of Labor issued this new rules, new rights for guest workers, whistleblower protections, forcing employers to prove that they've looked for Americans to do these jobs? And then just so we understand how these things go down, who jumped on it? Who pushed back? Who's burying it, Suckett?
Well, just to be clear, this is not about American workers or guest workers. It's about paying the lowest wages to maximize profits. And so there are industries like the seafood industry and the agricultural industry, the forestry industry.
And the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, right. People who put money in politics and influence elected officials. Senators Landrieu and Mikulski voted
Louisiana
with
and
the
Maryland.
Republicans.
Yeah, okay.
Louisiana and Maryland, you know, voted with the Republicans to block the Department of Labor's reform of the H-2B program.
Richard Shelby, Republican Senator Alabama, saying these rules are grossly misguided. He's quoted here. Lindsey Graham, South Carolina Republican, that the rules would punish the employer. Okay, maybe that's their political place. Tom Harkin, Democrat, Iowa, supporting the rules. But why would Mikulski and Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, where a lot of this goes on, why would they vote against the rules or push against them?
Well, part of the problem is that people like Paul have been misrepresented by industry associations. There are plenty of small business owners who are trying to play by the rules and want to pay a fair wage and provide dignified conditions at work. Those small business owners are being put out of business by people like Michael LeBlanc at CJ's Seafood, who are being squeezed by people like Walmart. When Walmart says low costs, they actually mean high profits. They get to those high profits by demanding that vendors sell at a certain low price. That forces those vendors to be competitive by undercutting other small business owners who do pay fair wages. It's it's a race to the bottom in terms of wages, and as a result, also in terms of working conditions. And it's not just confined to seafood. Last year, the National Guest Worker Alliance represented hundreds and hundreds of workers at the Hershey chocolate factory. What we found was that over 10 years, the Hershey's chocolate company had taken jobs that used to be good living wage union jobs and turned them into temporary and sub-minimum wage jobs. They had advertised outside of the United States on college campuses, students in China and Turkey who thought they were coming to the United States on a cultural exchange program through the J-1 visa found themselves packing chocolate for the Hershey's chocolate factory, working long shifts, and once again becoming captive labor. So this is not just seafood, it's manufacturing, you know, it's landscaping, it's the heart of the American economy, and it's not just guest workers. In one form or the other, all workers are becoming low-wage workers.
Hey, Ross, we just got half a minute before the break, and I'm sorry we have so little time, but what about people who say, well, we got into the global economy. Here we are. This is just the way it is. This is all we can afford. This is your new life, America. This is it. This is your reality. Deal with it.
Well, you know, the Walmart family, the six members of the Walmart family who own the company, who own the biggest shares of the company, have the same income as the bottom 30% of Americans. That's what's really going on here, people with a lot of power and a lot of money and control are squeezing everyone else down to the bottom, and they are keeping, you know, the lion's share of the profit, and it's not a good situation.
Heads up, America. When it happens in a crawfish plant in Brobridge, Louisiana, you also live and work on a continuum here. Ross Eisenberry with the Economic Policy Institute, thank you for joining us from Washington. Ai-Jin Poo with the National Domestic Workers Alliance in New York, thank you, Ai-Jin. And Saket Soni with the National Guest Worker Alliance, thanks to you all and our callers today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.